no corporations need be involved in this. It's all about yourself and about those that you love and those that you're capable of loving if you would only open your heart.
Very nice. Very nice. Ryan, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I wish you the best, and perhaps we'll have you back on again. And so keep doing your thing, man, and fantastic.
Yeah, I'll develop my ideas, and then I'll come back on. Have a good night, Raymond.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Take care.
All right, very nice.
That's Ryan Foster out of Kelowna. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that. You are listening to the Unbought and Unbossed show on CHLY. We're at 101.7 FM. We're also online at www.chly.ca. You can listen live streaming, so if you're not near a radio, you can be near a computer, right? Okay, I'm going to play a couple promo ads for you. Then we're going to come back and, we got a lot of show left, so stick around and we'll talk to you in a moment. Here we go.
Oh, such a clever little fellow. Oh, he's such a clever little fellow. Look, he found 101.7 FM. Chilly Radio all by himself. Such a clever little fellow.
Are we finished? The weather. Hey, I'm not doing the weather anymore. It's been done. It's kind of warm. It's kind of cloudy. All right, friends. Welcome back to the show. And let's move on. We got, 9 minutes after 9 o'clock. So let's carry on. And where did we end off? Okay, that's right. We're going to move into some 9/11 talk here. The actor Charlie Sheen, for the last couple of years, has been making his 9/11 questions known. And sadly, the corporate media is attacking him for having an opinion. So what we have coming up is Charlie Sheen's video message to President Obama. Now, this is a six-minute piece, and his video message is really only the last 3 minutes. Editor Aaron Dykes has put together this piece, which talks about some of the problems in the official story, and then it's backed up by news clips that kind of back those ideas up. So we're going to hear that, and then we're going to move on to my favorite journalist of all time, Bill O'Reilly and Geraldo Rivera, discussing, they're just attacking Charlie Sheen for being a brave fellow. However, they do play some parts of the, a couple clips from the actual speech, but omit anything juicy that might have made a strong point. So it's, typical Bill O'Reilly. So let's move on to that, friends. Charlie Sheen, and then a little bit of corporate media doing their best to say, hey, don't listen to anyone other than us. All right. Be well. Talk to you soon.
No warning signs that I'm aware of.
And it was a revelation that the White House had no intention of making public.
President Bush was told in August that Osama bin Laden might be planning an attack in Baden, the hijacking.
Could have predicted.
Nobody in our government, at least.
August 6th, PDG.
I believe the title was bin Laden determined to attack inside the United States.
70% of family members' questions were never answered during the 9/11 Commission report.
Charlie Hamilton and Thomas Keene said they were set up to fail.
I mean, I remember the commission. It's a scam. It's absolutely disgusting.
The questions, Mr. President. The questions.
Building 7 ablaze at the moment and apparently getting ready to collapse.
Building 7. Freefall collapse.
Well, no, there's number 7 coming down. The excitement and the fun that people get watching an old building being demolished, and they wired very carefully for days, and it's a very careful operation.
Third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before, when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
This one seemed to us as pulling, and they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse.
Jane, what more can you tell us about the Salomon Brothers building and its collapse?
Well, only really what you already know. Details are very, very sketchy.
You're getting information now that one of the other buildings, Building 7, in the World Trade Center complex, is on fire and has either collapsed or is collapsing.
The Pentagon. Vanishing airplane.
Some
my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon. The only site is the actual side of the building that's crashed in. And as I said, the only pieces left that you can see are small enough that you could pick up in your hand. There are no large tail sections, wing sections, a fuselage, nothing like that anywhere around, which would indicate that the entire plane crashed into the side of the Pentagon.
Firefighters and police describing explosions. A lot of them.
This is a secondary explosion. We've got numerous people covered with dust from the secondary explosion.
Just floor by floor, it started popping out.
It was like, was it, they had detonated.
Yeah, detonated.
They were planning to take down a building.
Looks sort of like the building just demolished.
Even if there was no secondary explosives in the building.
Kind of like gunfire. You know, bang, 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 bang. And then all of a sudden, three big explosions.
Do you know if it was an explosion or if it was a building collapse?
To me, it sounded like an explosion.
Chief Albert Turry told me that he tried to get his men out as quickly as he could, but he said that there was another explosion which took place. And then an hour after, there was another explosion in one of the towers here.
Sybil Edmonds, FBI translator, breaking her gag order.
All our intimate relationship with bin Laden and Taliban, we did carry very intimate relationship with these people all the way up to September 11.
Bin Laden was spirited into this military hospital in Rawalpindi for kidney dialysis treatment. The military had him surrounded. They were saying that Osama bin Laden had to be watched carefully and looked after.
NORAD standing down. Where were the planes?
On now to one of the eeriest moments amid the carnage of 9/11. A mysterious plane was seen flying right over the president's residence.
The E-4Bs over New York and Washington, otherwise known as the Doomsday Planes.
It has never been officially explained.
Cell phones working at impossible altitudes. Solicitor General Ted Olson receiving phone calls that the FBI says were never made.
What happened during that call? This is the only information we have on these terrorists.
She was able to call him twice. How she could pull that off, we don't know, but she did.
These are the questions, Mr. President. These are the questions. They go on and on.
Good afternoon, Mr. President. I come to you today representing the families of the victims of September 11th, as well as millions of my fellow Americans. Hopefully by now you've had a chance to read my letter to you, 20 minutes with the president, and if not, at least had its contents brought to your attention. We have questions, Mr. President. Lots of questions. A lot of them are detailed in my letter, but trust me, there are hundreds more questions. As my letter chronicles, sir, the 9/11 Commission itself says they were lied to, deceived, and essentially prevented from carrying out a real investigation. People of the United States and the world demand the truth, sir.
We have to continuously ask questions. That's what a patriot does. That's what a true American does. We ask questions.
You, sir, have the power as well as the responsibility to initiate a truly independent congressional investigation into the events of 9/11 as well as its aftermath. We want our country back, Mr. President. Therefore, I'm not just calling on you and your team. I'm calling on each and every American citizen to wake up, stand up, and demand the truth. We'll count on you, Mr. President. Be on the right side of history.
Investigation must not interfere with the ongoing efforts to prevent the next attack.
Senator Tom Daschle said last week that you called him several times and urged him not to investigate the incident. Tom's wrong. He has, I think, in this case, let's say a misinterpretation.
In the Fridays with Geraldo segment tonight, we continue our look at the far left vis-a-vis 9/11. Listen to actor Charlie Sheen.
Good afternoon, Mr. President. I come to you today representing the families of the victims of September 11th, as well as millions of my fellow Americans. You, sir, have the power as well as the responsibility to initiate a truly independent congressional investigation into the events of 9/11 as well as its aftermath. We want our country back, Mr. President. We'll count on you, Mr. President. So be on the right side of history.
Here now, Fox News anchor Geraldo Rivera.
Very cruel. Very cruel. Yeah, I got with Charlie. I know his dad, Martin Sheen. We worked together on the issue of the homeless in the 80s and the 90s. Charlie's one of those charming guys, like Rosie O'Donnell, who had similar views, who they're almost like they're covered in Teflon. No matter what Charlie does in life, whether it's the drugs or the hookers or whatever, you know, people still like him because he's a charming actor, and Rosie O'Donnell also. And similarly, I believe both of them are being sincere about this. I think that they have swallowed this Kool-Aid, where they, in defiance of the facts, in defiance of the historic record, in defiance of their own eyes and witnessing what happened when those planes smashing into the buildings, and I think unintentionally, I am sure, they are hurting the victims' families, the survivors, because they continue to raise this preposterous notion that the United States government would be so hideously manipulative that we would kill almost 3,000 of our own citizens as a pretext to going to war in Afghanistan. It is false on its face. It is extremely insensitive. And if it weren't for the fact that they are sincere but misguided, I really would feel even more emotional about it. But I think it is very, very negative vibe. That it's one of these things like Area 51 with the aliens in New Mexico. No matter how you
think,
define
you think
it,
she is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
He's crazy.
I think that he has a trick gene or a screw loose. I think that he is an addictive personality. A wonderful actor, and listen,
Rosie O'Donnell's career is nowhere sound drain because of her radicalism. He's hurting his career now.
I'm so misguided. Oh, there's some true patriots. Alrighty, there we are, Bill O'Reilly and Geraldo Rivera. Great Americans. Just great people in general. Psychopath. Alright, friends, you know that song means it's time for the events update. So what do we got going on for you? And that's it. That's going to do it for the announcements this week. Of course, you're listening to John Lennon. I don't want to be a soldier, and I don't want you to be a soldier. So where are we going to go for the rest of the show? First off, this piece by Gary Webb, In His Own Words. This was produced in 2004, and sadly, that's the year he died. And, it might have something to do with what he did. Gary Webb is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter who broke the story of the CIA's involvement in the importation of cocaine into the U.S. Yes, indeed. So this is put out by Guerrilla News Network, GNN. They're, they put on a seminar for students at the School of Authentic Journalism. That happened in 2002 in Mexico. So that is part of theirs. And then we're going to move on to this retired chief medical officer of Finland, who condemns this swine flu hype, and she has a lot to say about that. Rayuni Kildi. That's I said it better that time than I did the first time, so we're getting somewhere. And this excerpt we're going to hear is from the Researchers series, Bases 5. And the people who published that is Underground Video UK. So those are some of the things that you're going to hear next. So why don't we just move on to that? Another reminder, this is really, really important to me. Fun drive, actually it's a membership drive next week. $25 to become a member, but however, we will gladly accept less and more. So don't forget to tune in next week. We're going to have a lot of fun. That is one of my favorite shows, the fun drives, because I personally understand quite well the importance of independent media. And that is why I have this show, trying to let other people know that there is a whole other world going on that your TV is not catching. So support this station, support this show, and, well, support yourself. Support humanity is what you're going to be doing if you keep this station going. So why don't you, all right? Where we're going to go now is, like I told you, the Gary Webb. And then, do I have to say her name again? Rayoni Kildi, the retired chief medical officer from Finland. Okay, that's what you're going to get next. Stay tuned. Be well.
Investigative reporting is being sort of squeezed out of the picture, and I think intentionally, because it tends to ruffle feathers. I mean, good investigative reporting does ruffle feathers, and it draws lawsuits, and it gets newspapers in trouble.
Old pirates, yes, they rob I, sold I to the merchant ship.
My name's Gary Webb. I am an investigative journalist. I've been an investigative journalist for about 25 years for daily newspapers. And in 1996, I wrote a series of stories entitled Dark Alliance, which was about CIA involvement in drug trafficking. What my story showed was that the cocaine that was being sold in those neighborhoods was coming from mainly one source, and this one source was being used to finance a guerrilla war in Central America. The general idea of the CIA dealing drugs was something that the American mainstream press had never written about before, and that's why it prompted outrage among blacks, among drug reform activists, among politicians, by the CIA, by every federal agency involved in the drug war, because it showed they weren't doing their jobs, that it was a fraud. Right after we published the stories, the support we got from the media was very favorable. Newsweek magazine did a big piece on the story and said it was well documented and well researched. The website was getting like a million hits a day. There were marches in Watts, there were marches in Compton, there were candlelight vigils. Every California senator demanded an official investigation. So the story itself was really building momentum. The government reaction was no reaction. And this, I believe, was a very careful strategy, because nobody was going to believe the government if they came out and said we didn't do it. The proof was fairly overwhelming, since we had all these government documents showing that it had happened. So what happened was they let the so-called liberal press speak for them. And they had the national security reporters at the Washington Post, who coincidentally used to work for the CIA, write stories saying, it doesn't mean anything. It was a distraction from what the story said, and it became sort of a media war between the Mercury News, which had the story at that point, and the rest of the establishment media, who wanted us to back away from it. And part of that reason was because these major newspapers had written about this issue back in the 1980s, but had written about it very dismissively, as if this is nonsense, it doesn't happen, it never happened. And then 10 years later, we came back with documentation showing that it was absolutely true, and that it was worse than it was. We had gotten the story out around them, and we had gotten it out in a big way that they couldn't control, and that was through the internet. And I think a lot of this was directed to the Mercury News to say, we don't care what documentation you have, we don't care what kind of story you've got, we set the national news agenda. And if we don't like your story, we will kill your story regardless of the truth. The media rejoiced when this came out, because it meant they had won. They had forced a newspaper to back away from a story that was true, simply because of this barrage of criticism, of mindless criticism, essentially, that really took its toll on the editors of the newspaper. And they were being seen as sort of outcasts from the club. And I think they made a political decision that it was better in the long run to take a dive on this story and get back in the good graces of the rest of the media. It was essentially a war between my editors and myself, because I wouldn't apologize for the story or back away from the story, and fought them on it publicly. And so they transferred me to a bureau that was 140 miles from where I lived, and I called in sick a lot. One of the things I'm proudest of in regards to that story is the website that the Mercury News set up, because it really was the first time that a newspaper brought its readers not only into the interior of the paper, but into the reporters' notebooks. You know, this was a story that, as I told my editors, had a very high unbelievability factor built into it. A lot of people were going to say, this can't be true. And this story became a sensation because of the website. Not because of the story, but because people could get to it. And they could never have gotten to it before, because the San Jose Mercury News is a small regional newspaper in Northern California that you couldn't read if you lived in New York, or you couldn't read if you lived in L.A. But this story you could read anywhere in the world and see all of our documentation. So it became, and we did this on purpose, to make it very hard to knock down, to make it very difficult for people to say this didn't happen. But they said it didn't happen anyway. Authentic journalism is telling people something that the government doesn't want them to know.
That's involved with the food that the European Union are forcing on us.
Americans are mostly forcing it, you know, the American companies, but with gene-modified food and things like that, and we do not know, and nobody knows what's going to happen, because they experiment on long range. And we don't know what happens in a year or 20 years. Just like we don't know what happens, except we start knowing now, what happens with mobile phones in 20 years. You know, they cause brain tumors and blindness and deafness and cancer and whatever. It's totally, totally known. But it's experimentation on the long range.
Do you think that those frequencies and those devices are specifically selected to test on us? Do you think they're changing the species, or trying to kill us, or change us?
Well, at least they're making us very sick. And since the goal that I have read of the elite, if I can use that word, is to diminish our population on planet Earth by at least 2/3, maybe even 5 billion. So that's very, very negative.
Can you explore that more? I mean, we're facing this new disease which is coming out,
the swine
flu.
Oh, that's just rubbish. Really rubbish. You know, it's not the swine flu that's dangerous, it's the injections. Because it's supposedly, it's not only swine, but it is human virus mixed with swine virus, mixed with bird virus. And of course, behind the whole thing is to diminish world population, because it's very toxic, and to get milliards and milliards and milliards into the pockets of those who put them out. Rumsfeld is an owner also in one of the big drug companies. And since they want to diminish the population, so they start saying that children and pregnant women are the first ones. Eliminate the next generation.
So you've been trying to alert certain governments about this?
Not governments, but I have written information to Finland, because I don't think it's going to work. Because even if WHO...
It has been tried before, in the late 70s?
Yes, 76 they had in the States the swine flu, and it was stopped, the injections, after 3 weeks, because so many people died or got Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is, their neurology was destroyed. So now they're making a little adjustment and doing it the same. And before that, they have also made sure in the States that people don't get compensation for the damage in their health. Because previously, 76, they had to pay big, big amounts. Like, you know, in the States, their compensation is big when you destroy somebody's health. But now they have a law in the States that these companies are not liable. Nothing in compensation if the patient is killed or if the patient is sick for life. So they have really thought about it.
So they can poison us and kill us and get away with it scot-free.
That's right.
So how is this happening? How are so many governments allowing this to just happen?
Because they're not allowing it yet, because nobody has done anything yet. They are just having a scary program in the mass media. All mass media says, oh, it's going to be terrible. Now it's something, bum, bum, bum. It's a scary, scary, scary propaganda. And people get scared because they don't know. Now, WHO has ordered that, you know, everybody has to be by force injected. Previously, WHO did not have this ability to tell them to force any government, because it was only recommendations. But it was 97, 98, I recall, that they signed with 194, was it, states about that if there is a pandemic, or, you know, real serious pandemic, so then they give an order. Now, in the beginning already, in the beginning of June, WHO said pandemic 6, that's the highest. Now, go to any country in the world, people are not sick. There are not millions in swine influenza. So this was just done to force people and prepare the governments to give injections by force. But it's not going to work. I don't think Norway is going to do it.
So do you think the figures released by the World Health Organization are actually false?
Of course they are. Of course. Of course. But you have to remember, why do they do this? Always remember, who benefits? Who benefits? They have been forced, in my mind, to do this. And by whom? Big Pharma. Big Pharma, which is, you know, deals with the world population and the world money and all this. It's millions.
So what's the ultimate strategy, do you think, that's happening with this? What's their target? What's their intent?
The target is to get rid of so many people as possible and to get as much money for them as possible. But I think they have calculated wrong this time, because already in the Bilderberger meeting, the 14th and 15th of May this year, 1909, in Hellas, there was almost a split when they were discussing this. And I can well imagine that people normally, you know, attending do not always agree with Mr. Kissinger's plan to eliminate a great deal of world population. And now, for instance, yesterday, the Finnish government made a decision, changed laws, which is very interesting. Changed laws that swine influenza is not anymore on the list of being a dangerous, serious, contaminating disease. And that means that, of course, then people have to pay for themselves. It's a money question, too. But in my mind, of course, this is a legal question for the lawyers. But in my mind, if something is not a dangerous, contaminatious disease, you cannot be forced to take an injection, right? So I think they were very, very smart. Also, I just read that from the Folk Institute of Health in Norway, that director had said that there has never been many meaning to force people to take, but they can take an injection. And I hope nobody does, especially not children, especially not pregnant women, and actually nobody.
Okay, there we are. That's from the former Chief Medical Officer for Finland. She hopes that no one takes the swine flu virus. She's I don't know, maybe you have to retire before you can get that honest, but well done, Rayoni Kildi. Fantastic. And before that, we heard from Gary Webb in his own words. And again, he died an untimely death. And it might have something to do that he broke the story of the CIA's involvement in the importation of cocaine into the U.S. That is pretty unfortunate. There's one thing that I forgot to do is to thank my sponsors, the CHLY sponsors, for that last events update. So I would like to thank WarCriminalsOut.com, Edmonton 9/11 Truth, and Fraser Valley 9/11 Truth. Well done. Now, where we're going to go next is the speaker is Lennon Honor, and he's on a radio show. The host is Dire Wolf, and he's talking about television being the enemy. And I guess listeners of the show know that that follows my opinion as well. And where Levin is going with this is he's suggesting that television is used to make people think that the insane direction the elites are taking us, you know, is natural and healthy. And that is not a good thing. And as well, they're planting seeds of acceptance. And the phone is ringing. I can actually hear it ringing. I don't know if that's a good thing. Let's answer the phone. Hey, CHL Watt. Welcome to the air.
Hey, Raymond. It's Wayne Pronte calling.
Wayne Pronte, how you doing, buddy? I just did a piece on swine flu hype from this real outspoken Finnish lady.
Yes, so, I heard that. And when I heard it, I recognized it. I had it on my site there recently.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was a... It was a nice piece. I mean, it was so strong. I do a lot of fact-checking for the pieces that I play, but I thought I was suspicious of her, you know, just that she was so outspoken and had so much to say. It's like, whoa, I better find out that she's the real goods, and sure enough, she is.
Yeah, very powerful, absolutely powerful.
Yeah.
Sure. And, of course, the thing with Gary Webb there is, it's hard to believe how that's already been, what, 5 years or so?
Yeah.
Unreal.
I haven't looked into that story, but according to the report that I have here, he suffered from multiple gunshots with an S, plural. And
the back of the head.
Yeah. Is that... carry on, yeah?
Labeled as a suicide, yeah.
So he shot himself twice in the back of the head, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a... He's a pretty good shot, I guess, Son of a gun, eh?
Or a bad shot, one or the other, you know?
Yeah.
But whatever the case, it was a real shame. I was just devastated by that when I heard it.
Mm-hmm.
He did some excellent work.
Yeah.
But it's hard to believe that much time has gone by already.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, hey, I want to say, well, I enjoyed hooking up with you in Victoria this September 11th. Of course, that's a pretty sad occasion to meet under, but, you know, it's something that's pretty strong in our hearts. And so it was good to hook up with you there.
Oh, well, it was wonderful to see you and Chris and many other people that I know there as well. Kudos to Steve from Victoria for putting that on. It was just awesome. Of course, Splitting the Sky was there, and I hadn't seen him in quite a while either. So, met up with a lot of cool people there, and I want to thank Larry, a guy I'd never met before, put me up there for a couple of nights. So.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
Well...
Now, you have another information session coming up?
Absolutely, yeah. Just so your listeners know, those who did not make the trip there, I did speak there for about 10 minutes on Friday night before Splitting the Sky spoke, and I put that up on YouTube now if they want to see it. If they just look up False Flag Floyd, it should come up very quickly. And then I spoke again in a sort of off-the-cuff type of interview situation with Paul Stein from Victoria on Sunday, and that's up there, too, as part two of that. So
Check
it out.
Very nice.
And it's also on, of course, you can also just go to falseflagflu.com, and I've got it posted there at the very top as well.
Okay, falseflagflu.com.
Right. And the We're Not Going to Take It campaign is an ongoing thing. And, we're hoping that people are grabbing our free material from the website, the flyers and signs, and getting out and doing stuff. And actually on that topic, I should say greetings to Karen from Duncan, who contacted me just recently a few weeks back. And she tells me she's been out in the Duncan area putting up signs and flyers and everything all over the place. So that is awesome.
Good for her.
And that's what we need is some leaders like that in the community. We don't need tons and tons of people to do this. Just people who value this information and think it's important have to take the responsibility, as your other guest, I think, was it Ryan?
Ryan, yeah. Actually, I was going to mention how the power that we have that we might not know, you tap into it and you're going to find a big well. So
absolutely.
That was pretty neat.
And, I mean, that's the way I have always rolled. I just, you know, come up with an idea and a concept and go with it and you know, and people will join you and they'll get involved and they'll do it, you know, and just the 9/11 Truth Movement in Canada is just a great example of that. So it was it was great to get there to Victoria to see you guys and talk there. But we've got another event coming up in Vancouver on Saturday the 26th from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Robson Square.
Okay,
we're going to have another panel of speakers there. Some of them will be the same, some other ones as well. Shan Candace Hill is going to speak. Kevin Annett will be there again.
Oh, okay. Cool.
As well as John Hamill, who's a real powerhouse for health freedom. We're hoping, we've heard so far from Dr. Chris Shaw, he's a professor at the University of British Columbia. He can't guarantee it yet, but he's definitely with us, and he will hopefully be letting us know in the next week or not if he can make it or not.
Okay. And
so that's awesome. Then we have Sue Kelly, myself, Joel Lord, Rick Shanna from Vancouver, possibly Reg Argue, and a few others besides that.
What time is this kicking off?
Yeah, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. That's on a Saturday.
Okay, 3 to 6, good.
It's at the Art Gallery, Robson Square.
Very nice. I'll post that on my website for people that visit there.
Yeah, I'll send that to you as well. And, but we need, you know, in between that, you know, it's not just the big events. Like I said, we've got to get people out in every community who are concerned about these issues to get this information out to people, you know, and let them give them the power of informed choice.
Mm,
you know,
yeah.
We can empower other people if we just share the information that we have. You know, we don't have to share our opinion. Just give them the information that we know is out there that they probably are not getting access to through the mainstream media. And so that they can decide for themselves if this is a good thing to do or not,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And Health Canada just put out a bulletin today that they're who's now going to get the first shots and so on. And I just came across an article, and of course the vaccines in Canada will be put out by GlaxoSmithKline. I just came across an article that was published a couple of days ago that contains that has the ingredients of what will more than likely be contained in those, and it's not pretty. I can tell you that.
Right.
So I'm going to be posting it on my site probably later tonight. It's taking me all week just to get caught up again from the weekend.
Yeah.
So there's lots of new news that was put up in the last 24 hours on the website right now.
Okay.
Great
okay.
articles in there and some YouTube clips and so on.
Yeah.
So by all means, check it out.
Yeah. I passed on some of your flyers and your name and number to Pam, who has a Living for the Health of It, a health and wellness show. So I'm hoping that she's going to look you up and
wonderful.
And have you on discussing this. You know, it suits a medical show, so let's hope that you're on another chilly show.
Wonderful. Yeah, I would look forward to that. And by the way, big kudos to the guys from Toronto Truth. They've been out every weekend, you know, all through the summer and all, you know, through all the good weather through spring and summer. They've been out every Saturday afternoon from 1 p.m. till dusk. Doing truth actions for 9/11 Truth, but also they've really jumped on board with the vaccine issue.
Okay.
And so they're very busy with that. And even on days in between, some of them are handing out flyers and stuff.
There you go. Very nice.
That's what we need, man. Just take responsibility for it.
Yeah. Good. Good.
All right.
Okay, my friend. Saturday 26th, Robson Square, 3 to 6. Another information session from the vaccine resistance movement.
Yeah, and we really need people to get out and do that, and then think about putting out an event in your own area. That would be great, you know.
Yeah.
And let us know about it. Just information.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Well done, Wayne. Thanks for the call in.
Okay. Well, thank you, Raymond. Great show tonight.
Right on,
take
brother.
Care.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Okay. Very nice. Regular contributor Wayne Pronte. Okay. So very good. Let's move on. I was starting to introduce this next audio clip, and it will likely be the last one tonight. We're getting towards the time here. This is an 8-minute clip And as I told you earlier, I'll remind you, Lenin Honor, talking about television as the enemy. And my take on what he was saying is that television is consciously being used to make people think that this insane direction that the elites are taking us is, well, natural and healthy, and it's not. You know, they're attempting to plant seeds of acceptance, you know, and Lenin Honor is going to get into that in detail. So, are we going to talk again? Yeah, maybe I'll come back at the end and say goodnight to you folks. Another reminder, membership drive next week. Please tune in for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. And, all right, we'll get back to you shortly. This is the Unbought and Unbossed Show on CHLY. We're also online at www.chly.ca. Okay, friends, hang in there.
Another thing with the television that I found really creepy about myself even was I could not take naps without the television on.
Yes, yes.
So that it's bringing in shit into my head while I'm sleeping. Now, that's scary as hell.
Yeah, my I was going to say who it is, but I don't want to say any names. But I have a relative who actually couldn't sleep unless the television was on. And not only could she not sleep, but it had to be up at a certain level, the volume. And then also she had to be close enough to it to where she can actually, you know, feel, you know, the warmth from the television screen. So, there was a doctor, he was talking about it in one of his videos on YouTube. He was talking about how people are literally addicted not only to television, but also to the radiation from the television. People have been put into a state where they actually have a craving for the actual radiation that's emitted from the television. And that's deep. And that speaks to why my relative had to get close enough to the television in order to feel those, you know, basically feel that. And for her, it was a form of comfort. And then she would be able to fall asleep. So that just goes to show you the degree of manipulation. Another thing I want to point out, too, while we're talking about television, is one of the things that television does that I think people really need to understand is that as human beings, we're able to perceive reality on many different levels. We're not three-dimensional beings, and we're not four-dimensional beings. We're not five. We perceive things on many different dimensions. Time itself is multidimensional. Human beings, you know, how we interact with each other, it's multidimensional. We deal with stuff that happened in the past, and we use it in the present, and with this hope for the future. So it's this multidimensional experience. One of the things, when it pertains to our sight and reclaiming our sight, one of the things that television does is it limits our ability to perceive reality with a certain dimensional awareness. And what I mean by this is that when you look at a television, it's basically it's a flat screen. And this flat screen is one dimensional. It's just flat. You know, it doesn't have depth. You know, it's just a flat screen that sits like an altar, a god sitting in front of you that's one dimensional. And people sit there and they look at it. And our brain, by perceiving through our eyes, we take these one dimensional images because they're one dimensional. We take it and we're basically, if we perceive it as three dimensional. In our mind's eye, we believe that what we see on the screen is real, that it has three dimensions, that there's, you know, depth to it, that the people that are standing in the foreground, these people are actually in front of the people who are standing in the foreground. But that's not reality. Reality is just one-dimensional. It's flat. And what happens over time is the more and more people watch television, the more and more limited they are in their ability to perceive multi-dimensions. Because what's happening is their brain is basically being taught to perceive one dimension as three. And so, therefore, when they see the rest of the world, instead of seeing the rest of the world in three dimensions, or which, you know, is a basic, you know, three dimensions, they only see it in one dimension. And so the television becomes what they project onto reality. The television becomes their reality. And when we talk about reclaiming our sight, there's no way that we can understand, like, the degree of manipulation that's taking place on the planet, you know, and in the cosmos itself, if we can only perceive things on a one-dimensional level. Because when we perceive things on a one-dimensional level, we only perceive things on a reactionary level. And that's a base human instinct kind of level, but we have to go beyond that. We have to be able to perceive things on multidimensional. So that's why television in and of itself as a creation, it holds within it an evil intent. It's almost like a demonic being that literally takes away people's ability to perceive reality on with the dimensional awareness that we as human beings have the capacity to perceive. The one other thing I want to mention real quick about television, because this is like a topic that I find really fascinating, is that if you look at the evolution of the television, when it first began, it was like in black and white. So its ability to program our mind was not as pronounced in that we perceive reality with all these different colors and, you know, the different colors give depth to things, and the different colors give it a certain realness. It gives us a certain kind of life. When things don't have color, we kind of, you know, it doesn't seem like it's alive. When it has, you know, vibrant colors, we're like, oh, wow, it's beautiful. It's alive. It's a manifestation of life, right? Well, when the television was black and white, we didn't perceive it as being reality initially. But as you see television evolve throughout its different manifestations, technically speaking, the technology itself began to evolve, and you see the introduction of color, and then you see the introduction of larger televisions and more channels, more programming, and then you see the television itself become like flat screen. Then you see the television become nowadays it's this high definition, right? Where they, and then they have them on the wall, these high definition, and no one ever stops to think, what does it mean? What do they mean by high definition? Are we just talking about the images are more defined? No, that's not it at all, because the intent of the box or the cube or the television, it was not to give you images. So it's not the defining of images. It was really about the definition of programming, because that's what it was about from inception. It was about programming people's mind. So when we say high definition, what is that exactly? Well, that's high definition programming. That's what I mean by seeing things on a different kind of level, understanding the symbolism, even in the words they use. So now we're going into the digital, right? And so now it's become digital programming. And that digital programming, it brings up certain ideas about humanity evolving or really devolving into a pseudo-human, pseudo-robot, pseudo-hybrid robotic automaton. And so these concepts are like what's really going to be coming to the forefront is this idea of human beings fusing with robotics. I don't know if any of you have ever seen the show called Star Trek Voyager. They have this one character in there, and she's what they call the Borg. And the Borg, they're these robotic, they're part, you know, kind of have human features, but they're robot. They have all these robotic implants, and their whole quest is for perfection. So how they gain perfection, these humanoid, once humanoids, how they gain perfection is through adapting these cybernetic implants and becoming more like cyborgs. And what they did was, this is what I mean by the degree of programming. What they did in the series is they took one of these cyborgs, and it was this young lady, and they actually took her out of her hive. They call it the hive. Because they're a hive mentality. Everyone thinks as one, as a Borg. They have a queen, and the queen, whatever the queen wants them to do, they do it, right? But their whole quest is for perfection. If they have to kill other species in order to attain perfection, then they do that. So they bring one of these Borg out of that environment, and they begin a process of humanizing her. And one of the things that they did very well was they also sexualized her. And by sexualizing her to the general population, what that did is it provided a certain kind of a sexual attraction to these concepts of cybernetic implants, this concept of the merging of the human and the robotics and the cybernetic ideal. And you'll see this playing itself out more and more in society where in order to attain perfection, this is like the deeper levels, in order to attain perfection, one has to submit to the technology. And not only do you submit to the technology, but you actually bring the technology into your body. And so when we talk about the IFRD chip, these are all these shows that talk about this is basically the programming for this. They actually sexualized it. And sexualized it to a degree to, and I mean, they even had the girl all padded up, and her breasts were, you know, basically you can tell they were all padded. Her backside was all padded, and she had on a skimpy outfit, and it's real tight to her skin. All this is subliminal, I mean, so that people can fall in line with this agenda. And it all goes back to television, because television in and of itself, how people implement television into their life, they actually take it into their bodies. It's almost like a...
Well, they don't call it television programs for no reason.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And I'm sorry for going off on a tangent, but I
not at all.
Yeah, I just think television in and of itself, it's a fascinating topic, but I think that it's an important one to really dissect deeply, because when we talk about how we've been manipulated not to be able to perceive reality and how our sight has been, our sight has been taken from us, the television plays a major role in that process.